everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of the Hubcast. I'm Katie Apple, the Executive Director of Nonprofit Hub and Do More Good, and one of your hosts today.
And I'm Jordan Geisert, Assistant Executive Director and your other host. Each episode of the Hubcast is designed to give you, our listener, ideas and inspiration to move your organization from good to growth. In every episode, we feature a thought leader who is working in or with the nonprofit sector to do more good. Today's Hubcast is sponsored by DonorBox. DonorBox is transforming the art of fundraising. They bring the functionality and power of online fundraising to your nonprofit with a sleek interface and nonprofit-specific tools. With DonorBox, you can connect with donors on a deeper level and raise more funds quickly and easily, helping you make an even bigger impact. Visit www.donorbox.org to sign up today. I'm so excited for today's podcast.
Hey, Jordan, I am too. One of my favorite experts that we work with.
That I was just going to say the exact same thing. It's Nathan Hill from Next After. He is the vice president of marketing over there. And he always gives us incredible information and takeaways.
Oh, I don't get to attend every webinar. I never want to host Nathan's because I want to be listening. Yeah. I want to be one of the attendees because I'm taking notes the entire time.
So every webinar he's done with us, I've gotten to host, and I love it because I can like put the questions that are like most important to me at the beginning. So yeah, always a pleasure.
An amazing individual. I can't wait to hear his background. And I also can't wait to hear what he's going to share with us at Cause Camp.
Yes. I'm so excited that he will be there this fall.
Definitely. Well, let's let him in the room.
All right. Well, today on the Hubcast, we have Nathan Hill. Nathan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. I'm pumped to be here.
Well, you know, you've done several webinars for us in the past, and we thought perfect opportunity to get you on the Hubcast.
Yeah, well, I have loved the hubinars that we've been able to do. Honestly, they're some of the time that I look forward to the most. People are just like so engaged and ready to ask any and all questions, and they're just a ton of fun. So, yeah.
Selfishly, I look forward to those because I learn something every single time. Well, and all we do is hear from experts, but we learn from you. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I do too. And it's always a good challenge because there's always like questions that come up like, oh, I haven't heard that before. And like, how do we think about that? Have we framed that? So it's a mutual learning opportunity.
Absolutely. Well, let's get started. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your career, all that stuff, and then talk about Next After too.
Sure. Well, how much do you want to hear about my career? I could
yeah. We love origin stories.
Okay. Well, I'll give you my origin story. So I am the VP of marketing at Next After. And just in short, what we do is we help nonprofits grow their digital fundraising. So our vision is to unleash the most generous generation in the history of the world, which is a really audacious vision. And it's one we absolutely cannot do on our own. You know, so we work with about 40 different organizations. And the sliver of nonprofits that we can work with is actually fairly small, probably like the top 5% of nonprofits. That's just the way our model works. But our mission is much bigger than that. So to try to unleash generosity, we can do some research and some testing with some organizations and help them grow their fundraising. And that's cool. But we want to decode what actually works in giving and to actually increase generosity. And then we want to equip as many nonprofits and charities and organizations and fundraisers as we possibly can with what we're learning works to grow generosity so that they can go out and continue to, you know, fulfill that larger vision of how do we grow giving and generosity, you know, across the world in a meaningful way. So that's kind of what we do in a nutshell. But yeah, as someone who runs our marketing, I don't have a marketing degree. My background initially in terms of my education is actually in Bible. I have a Bible degree, which maybe seems random based on what I'm doing today. But yeah, you know, I actually went to school at Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. And so that was ended up being sort of my first foray into digital marketing was I, as a student, took a job working for Moody Radio, and I was publishing like web content programming, web content for one of their programs. And basically at that point, my resume that made me somewhat, that I thought made me qualified for that job was I played in a band in high school and early college. And so I learned a little bit of HTML because I was trying to, you know, reformat our MySpace page and all of that. So I was like, yeah, I can publish some web content for a program. And so that was kind of my first steps into marketing and digital marketing. And then it kind of went from there, just lots of opportunities to dive into email marketing next, and then just larger scale digital marketing, and eventually found myself in a place where, you know, I was kind of looking around and wanting to grow more in my, you know, knowledge and ability, getting really into like testing and optimization and how do we look at data to grow our giving, and felt like, you know, the people that were really at the forefront of trying to figure some of this stuff out were at Next After. And so that's kind of what brought me to Next After in the first place. So that's kind of how I'm here.
I had no idea. I know Moody Bible College pretty well. I mean, I'm in West Michigan, and that's like a huge, huge college over here. Wow. Yeah. That's a journey. That's amazing.
Yeah. Did not expect to really be in this, you know, this line of work, but I think that's a lot of people in the nonprofit space. Most people I talked to didn't set out with the intention of working in nonprofit, but kind of found themselves there for one reason or another. And it's just been just so much of a joy for me to get to work with different fundraisers, different organizations in a lot of different capacities and provide like the little bit of knowledge I have to help, you know, increase giving and increase funding in this way or that. But being able to serve all sorts of organizations that have just impact around the world and a ton of different causes is so meaningful, and it's so fun, and kind of, you know, keeps me going every day.
You say a little bit of knowledge, and I'm thinking about before we went live with this podcast, Jordan and I were like, Nathan, can we ask you this? Can we ask you one more thing? Can we just run this by you? You are a wealth of knowledge, so don't get too humble on us.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So Next After presents itself as a digital first agency, and you encourage nonprofits to do digital first fundraising. Talk to us about what that means to be digital first.
Sure. I mean, it basically means what it says, which is we try to put, you know, digital in terms of digital fundraising, digital marketing in a position to lead, where a lot of agencies, and I won't, you know, talk bad about anyone or anything like that, but a lot of agencies, you know, that really are, you know, effective on the direct mail side, and maybe the history of their work is largely direct mail, have then tried to figure out, you know, how do we do digital? And so digital becomes kind of a bolt on strategy in some ways, where it's not, you know, the primary driver for, you know, an agency that's trying to help an organization figure out how do we grow. The driver for that agency is largely, you know, how do we get this organization to spend more money on direct mail that helps the agency out, and then hopefully that can also lead to growth for the organization. But that means that digital tends to be sort of an afterthought, or has to sort of follow the playbook of direct mail fundraising, and maybe doesn't give it the right intentionality and space to, you know, sort of be its own thing. And so we try to put digital in a position, again, to lead and be digital first. And there's data and research and reasons why we do that, not just because like we think it's cool, which I mean we do, but ultimately, kind of the core thing we come back to and looking at, is it even valuable to invest your fundraising work and your fundraising dollars online? And what we see is we look at different like cohorts of donors. You've got basically four different types. You've got people that give offline and only give offline. You've got people that give offline, but maybe you have an email address for and can cultivate, you know, through online channels. You've got people that only give online, and then you've got people that are like multi-channel donors. So give through more traditional means, maybe through the mail, and then they also might give on your website. And so what we find is that, and this is just pretty common knowledge, that a multi-channel donor is like three times as valuable over their lifetime as a single channel donor. Which then begs the question of how do you get more people to become multi-channel donors? And when we're trying to analyze from the organizations that we work with, as we look at, you know, what's the likelihood of an offline donor, offline only donor becoming a multi-channel donor, it's actually really low in comparison to a donor that you acquire online. So an online donor actually is anywhere from like 400% more likely to become a multi-channel donor, upwards of like 14,000% more likely to become a multi-channel donor than someone who was acquired offline. And the primary reason for that being, like, it's if someone is going to give to you on your, you know, website, on your donation page, they're likely still giving you some of their offline contact information, like a mailing address. So you can actually immediately start cultivating them both online and offline. And then they might give to you via multiple channels, where if you start with an offline donor, it's way harder to get their email address or sync them up with some sort of like online account, like a Facebook account, and cultivate them that way. So if we put digital first, we tend to find that you have a much greater likelihood of acquiring donors that then become your most valuable donors as a multi-channel donor.
That makes sense. I think that, I don't want to date myself, but I think back to working in an ED in a smaller nonprofit, and we did the receipt envelopes, and we'd always ask for an email address. And I would say like 90% of our support back then came in through paper check. And once in a while, someone would give their email address, but the odds of being able to read it, you know, you get these older individuals and they're still writing cursive and like no one can make it out. Yeah. That's bringing it down to nitty gritty, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. The combination of how many people can you get to actually say, yes, I want to give you it, and then actually be able to read it and then actually input that accurately and then make sure it's actually a mailable email address that just like, yeah, it kind of ratchets down your effectiveness. That's interesting.
Definitely.
Lots of steps.
All right.
Well, that kind of leads into my next question. So like I mentioned before, you presented several webinars with us, and they all had kind of the same message of how important testing is to boost marketing and fundraising efforts in your organization. And I was just wondering if you could touch on that a little bit, give our audience like a little bit of an overview of that.
Sure. Well, it's kind of one thing that I think sets us apart in some ways. And it's really a key, it's honestly, it's one of our core values as a company is to always be testing, whether that is on a Facebook ad or in an email, but even sometimes that permeates into like lunch. So on occasion, and we tend to bring in lunch every day for our staff. And so we'll do like a pizza taste off, which by the way, the like black box Domino's pan pizza is the winner. We probably had like six or seven. Like you've got like some craft pizza places and you've got like Domino's and some other like typical delivery ones. Best delivery pizza is Domino's pan. So we're testing even in that way to get data around the most critical questions. But back to fundraising. Yeah, A/B testing and optimization is really like the core way that we try to understand what actually works to grow giving. Oftentimes, even you go to different events and hear from different experts that are in many cases rely on, you know, best practices maybe from 10 years ago. And who's to say that best practice was actually the best practice at that time? Typically, best practices are just kind of like rounded up knowledge that's based on, you know, aggregate data or averages, but it may not actually work for you or be most effective for you. Sometimes best practices, like somebody just made it up. Oftentimes they're self-serving. Sometimes like an email platform will tell you what the best practices for email are, but they're all based on what that platform is able to do. So there may be strategies that you can't implement via this platform, but would actually be the quote unquote best performing strategy for you. So we always have to go back to A/B testing and optimization to really prove using data, using statistics, what is actually going to work to increase clicks, increase email conversion, increase donations, increase revenue over time. And absent that data, then we're just kind of going with our gut and our intuition, which is wrong most of the time.
You shared something in the last webinar you did with us. You talked, and Jordan references this all the time as we kind of lay out our plans for the month or the week. You gave the time frame of don't just test things once, like do it over, I think you said 2 to 3 weeks. Is that generally like a good time frame? Should we go longer when we have the ability?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into that. You know, typically if you're sending an email and you're trying to run a subject line test or a copy test, or maybe it's an email design test, personally, I try to give those at least a full week before I really look at the data. The majority of your results for those are going to come in within the first, 48 hours, and then it will kind of be a trickle. So sometimes email can be like the exception to the rule, but typically we try to run a test for at least a week, like minimum. 2 weeks is better, but then also no longer than about 3 months, because if you run a test too long, then you get into situations where you might see some differences in performance based on like seasonality and variables that you weren't accounting for. So it's possible to run it too long, but then if you run it for too short, especially something like on a donation page or something on your website, if you run it for only 24 hours or for 48 hours, you might be getting like a sliver of traffic that isn't representative of like your traffic as a whole. So you do want to give it a couple weeks time. But then the other factor there is actually your sample size. How much time are you going to need to get enough people to see it to get a valid result? And that's going to vary based on your performance. And there's some great like tools out there to calculate how many people do you need to see your test. Optimizely has a great tool, but if you just Google sample size calculator, you'll find some tools to help with that.
I think that when you say A/B testing, I mean, I certainly at the beginning, I was like scared away because A/B testing sounds scary, but like it can be as simple as just changing a subject line, like sending one subject line to half the audience and another one to another half. Like it's that simple, basically, is what I'm getting.
Essentially, like if you boil it down, essentially it's that, you're going to split your audience in half. You're going to have, 50% of your audience is going to see subject line version A and 50% is going to be subject line version B. And some of the nuance comes in like, how do you actually craft an experiment or an A/B test that's going to give you a reliable learning and a reliable insight? Because maybe subject line A just says, I don't know, here's our great donation appeal. I don't know what it says. You've got subject line A, it says something about the contents of the email. Subject line B says the same thing, but now you've added an emoji. If one of those works or one of those performs better than the other, like, do you really get an insight about your donors? Are you actually learning like more about their motivations and have a learning you can apply down the road? So you need to have like a solid hypothesis going into a test about not just, what are you going to change, but also what's the impact that it's going to make? How does it affect sort of the psychology of what's going on in someone's brain? So that's where some of the complexity comes in on like the design side of an experiment. So how do you design an experiment in a way where you're going to get a reliable learning and a reliable insight that doesn't just help you in that moment for that one email, but how does it give you insights that can apply for, the emails you send for the rest of the year? And then maybe insights you can start to test on your donation page and in other channels.
I love that. Start with not the end, but the goal in mind, kind of. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a few different experiments that, we work with lots of different organizations and we run testing with them, but also, organizations can sign up for our tool called Winston Knows, and you can create an account and you can submit your own experiments and track your learnings that way. And there's some experiments in there that get submitted from others. Granted, we're not perfect all the time either, but I've seen some where, you're testing like red button versus blue button in an email. And then ultimately if nothing happens, like what did you learn? Like there's not, what's the psychological difference of a red button versus a blue button, other than like some joke about the Matrix in there somewhere? But like,
well, isn't there like a big chunk of the population that is like colorblind and they can't see blue anyway? So it might be kind of like, might be kind of skewed anyway. So,
well, maybe that's your learning, is how many people on your list are colorblind and can't actually see the blue button.
Yeah.
But I don't know how you apply that later down the road.
No, that's a great takeaway, because honestly, I think a lot of nonprofits just think of it. I know I thought of it that way. Like, let's add an exclamation point, or let's, try this different wording of the same message. And it doesn't really get us any closer to the end goal, which is
right.
Cultivate more donors.
Right.
I want to give a quick shout out to today's Hubcast sponsor, DonorBox. DonorBox is a donation platform that can be set up quickly and easily on your website or on a DonorBox hosted fundraising page.
They've worked with more than 35,000 organizations around the world, helping them increase their donations by providing an excellent donor experience. Best of all, there's no setup fee, no monthly fee, and no contract required to start using DonorBox. So visit www.donorbox.org to sign up today. Now back to the Hubcast.
So I think I know how you might answer this one, but I want to ask it anyways. So we see you as the authority on like marketing and comms trends, and you've proven you're kind of, you know, in the front of the curve in terms of what's happening. What's one trend that you wish more nonprofits would pick up on?
Yeah, well, I mean, outside of testing, because
I thought it was whatever.
Well, we've talked about that, so let's talk about something else.
I owe Jordan $10.
Actually, Jordan and I were in cahoots on this, so we're splitting the $10.
Oh, sorry.
So outside of testing, honestly, one of the biggest things that you can do to start improving your marketing and communication is to stop talking like a marketer and stop talking like a traditional fundraiser, but start having real human interactions with the people that you email or show ads to or just interact with on a daily basis. I mean, one thing we often say is that, you know, people give to people, not to fundraising or marketing machines. And so we tend to craft emails in a very human way that begs a response. I mean, if the channel and medium of email was created for people to reply and talk with other human beings, then shouldn't we be crafting our communications to donors in a way that fosters replies? Typically, people don't want to be marketed to, and this is supported in the data. When you send emails that look and sound like they're marketing, like you're trying to get someone to just take an action, most people are going to just hit archive or delete, or worse, they're going to mark you as spam and they're going to move on, which is why oftentimes we see like really abysmal open rates and click rates and performance from our emails. It's because we just sound like, you know, Nike trying to sell you shoes in your inbox as opposed to having a real meaningful relationship with donors. So for those listening, if I can like, you know, encourage you to do one thing, it's just to, you know, start untraining yourself as to how to be a marketer and start retraining yourself to talk and sound and write just like a human who wants to interact with other humans.
Hashtag be human. Okay.
Yes. So, and if I can add one more thing there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
This is kind of something we started doing a month or so ago, maybe 2 months ago. So we use HubSpot as our tool, primary tool for, you know, sending emails. And within HubSpot, there's a filter that gets kind of auto-applied to your emails, and you have to uncheck it if you want to uncheck. But basically it says, you know, if someone hasn't opened the last 11 emails that you've sent them, then suppress them, so you don't just keep sending them stuff they don't want. And so we wondered, you know, is this metric even a reliable metric? Is there a way that we can sort of, you know, cut people off before they get to that 11 email mark? And so we set up this workflow where you get an email from me after you haven't opened 9 emails, and we've tried to craft the subject line in a way that like nearly guarantees an open, or at least tries to get maximize opens more so than like clicks or any other engagement. And it basically says like, hey, you haven't opened the last 9 emails from me. And then you open that, and I've gotten so many replies from people talking about how like, actually, no, I open every single email from you, so something must be wrong with your tracking and things like that. And it started to give us some pretty interesting insights as to the quality of like email open tracking and how much it can be relied upon. But what's interesting is like, we don't get that type of feedback without sending emails like a human being. Because you're just getting an email from me, from my email address, having a conversation, just trying to show empathy and make sure like, are we sending you things that are meaningful to you? But if I'm sending just some like generic marketing email that says like, you're about to be off the list and blah, 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 and has a bunch of design, I'm never going to get that reply and that feedback that's going to actually help me improve my communication. So there's so many advantages to talking like a human, building relationships with people, even at scale through an email file, give you a lot of feedback you would never get otherwise.
Super timely, especially with the changes coming for email. I mean, soon privacy laws are going to prevent us from even tracking opens. I mean, I think we'll still have the ability to track click-through rates, but yeah. I mean, yeah. All the more reason to kind of shift your strategy now, get ahead of it.
For sure. For sure. And opens are a hot mess anyway, and they have been for a while. And I think it's only like tracking opens is only getting worse. One of our staff members is in like a developer group. And I guess, so some of the new updates to iOS 15, when that rolls out, some of the initial reviews are basically saying like every email that gets downloaded is getting flagged as opened, like because it downloads all images like immediately. And so then if every email that anyone receiving on an iPhone gets flagged as an open, then how can you rely on that as a metric at all? So no maybe kidding. We're going to see that in the next couple of years.
So we're Gmail users, and I use the different buckets. So I don't know what the proper name for it is, but anytime I click over to a different bucket, it automatically opens the first email. So like whatever spam is on the top of my spam bucket or my promotions folder, like they got an open from me, even though I did no intention of reading their email.
They're celebrating that.
Yeah.
Like you still just delete it and probably.
We got Katie Apple. It's a messy business.
Yeah. It's a messy metric.
So follow up to that. You've kind of given us something you wish nonprofits would do, be human. What's one trend that you wish they would just kind of let go of?
Yeah, and this is where you'd be right in guessing my answer, which is just stop assuming that things work without actually putting it to the test and without actually getting real, you know, reliable data around it. It's so easy for us to operate from just our gut feelings and our intuition. And, you know, as marketers and fundraisers, we have to do that to a certain extent. But as much as we can get data around the things that actually work, we're going to be set up for so much more success. I think maybe what pains me more than that is when, you know, fundraisers and marketers are presented with data about what might actually work to grow their response and grow their metrics and grow their fundraising and grow their revenue. And then the response is something like, well, I think it's different for our donors, or I think it's different for our organization, or even in some cases, you know, as we've taught some different training courses, like internationally, oftentimes there's a gut reaction of like, well, maybe this works in the States or in North America, but this doesn't work with our culture. Maybe our culture, you know, is more visual and focused more on, you know, creative visual arts and things like that. So we shouldn't use as much copy in our emails or in our ads, but then that the conversation ends there. Like if you don't really have data to support that argument, how do you actually know? So I guess if there's one thing that I would encourage someone to stop doing, it's stop assuming that you know. Be willing to say, I don't know. Those are like super empowering and freeing words, is admitting I don't have all the answers. Because if you can admit that, you can actually go find them. You can actually get data. You can give voice to your donors through analytics and through data to find your answers. And that ultimately is only going to lead to more people trusting you. Like if you're willing to be transparent and admit that you don't know everything, how much more are people going to trust you when you say that you do know and you do have the answer? Mm-hmm. So
it reminds me of that really dumb old joke about, you know what assume does?
Right.
It makes a, you know what, out of you and me.
Yeah.
I don't think I've heard that one.
Oh, you haven't.
You're going to have to slack it to me later, Katie.
It's so you might want to cut this out, but the joke is when you assume you make an ass out of you and me, think of the letters and assume.
Yeah. Should I bleep it? I can bleep.
Oh, that'd be fun.
So much fun.
Yeah.
Bleep it, or you could have an explicit podcast. I don't know.
Yes. Yeah.
Make you
not made for kids.
Let's test what being explicit does for our audience.
You'd be like, oh, that's cool. Yeah. Cutting edge.
Edgy.
Okay. So next question. I ask every one of our podcast guests this question. Do you have a couple quick tips that our audience could implement right away? And this could be regarding donation forms, emails, really anything that comes to mind for you.
Sure. Well, going back to even this, that idea of trying to sound more like a human and have, you know, real empathetic communication. I mean, one thing that you can literally do tomorrow, or an email going out later today or next, whatever your next email is, just send it from a person. So don't send it from the name of your organization or a brand name. Don't even send it from like, you know, Jordan, comma, nonprofit hub. Just send it from Jordan, or just send it from Katie, or just send it from Nathan, or Nathan Hill, and from your email address. Because again, if email was designed to foster real relationships, you expect to get emails from people and not from nameless, faceless organizations and brands. So that's one thing, is just send your next email from a person, but don't just stop at the sender line. Write your copy like you're just writing an email to someone you know, to a friend, to a colleague, to a peer. Don't use a ton of design. So get rid of like all the big logos and hero images and branding, and just write something that looks like an email you're just going to send out of Gmail, so it looks and feels believable. Because again, it's not disingenuous. You're sending real emails to real people and expecting to have a real relationship. You're just doing so at scale. So that's one thing, is just send from a person and make sure it looks like you're sending from a person. And if I can actually have two things here, the other thing would be start sending like an extra cultivation email. One thing that we have found in the past couple of years, as we've been doing a little bit more research into just donor cultivation, how you cultivate subscribers on your email file, is that in a lot of cases, I think the number was like 13% of organizations that we studied in a study like last year didn't send any form of cultivation to their donors, into their donor file. So that means that everything that their donors receive via email was basically another donation appeal or some sort of like receipt. That's basically the extent of the communication. And then even when you break down, how do organizations communicate with email subscribers versus existing donors, donors tend to get way less like just pure cultivating content than even your existing email subscribers that aren't donors. So in many cases, we're failing our donors to actually like steward them well, cultivate them well, which is why we see such poor donor retention rates. So if you can do one thing from just a strategy level, start sending at least just like one cultivation email per month. If you can do one per week, that's even better. But if you can send one just once per month to provide some sort of free content, whether it's a blog post or it's a story of impact, to just illustrate like, hey, your donation is going to do some really incredible things and thank you. To just start cultivating people. Send it from a real person, make it short and sweet and simple, believable, human copy. Don't ask for a donation. Don't expect any other sort of, big call to action that is a revenue generator. Just build your relationship with your donors. And you will actually see that pay off in terms of donations over time, just not from that one email.
Great tip. Thank you.
So you're going to join us this year at Cause Camp, am I
right? I'm planning on it. Yep. I still got to book my flight, but I'm planning on it.
Well, we are excited. Can you give our audience just a little sneak peek of what they're going to enjoy from you?
Sure. Well, it will be different than any of the webinars that I've been on, which is fun to bring kind of a new topic. But we'll be talking about value proposition, and maybe that term on its surface doesn't sound like all that super exciting. We're not talking about like, I don't know, TikTok or something cool. but we're talking about value proposition, and specifically, how do you communicate why someone should give to you, and how do you do so effectively? So what we're going to do is look at four specific elements of an effective value proposition to help you better communicate across channels, not just on a donation page, but also in your emails, also in your advertising, also even just having a conversation with a potential donor, whether it's over the phone or in person. We're going to walk through four elements that you can use to make sure you have an effective value proposition. And essentially, that just answers this core question of why should I give to you rather than to some other organization or not at all? Because whether consciously or subconsciously, every one of your potential donors is asking that question in some way, shape, or form before they actually hit the donate button and make a transaction. So we'll dive into that.
Guaranteed better ROI for this session than the TikTok.
So that's why we're not talking about like cool stuff online. We're talking about foundational things that are going to permeate not just your online fundraising, but your fundraising as a whole.
Definitely.
Well, I'm super excited for Cause Camp, and I'm so glad that you're going to be there. One last question. Where can people find you?
Well, currently I am in central Illinois in my parents' basement on a road trip. So you can find me there if you want to chat in person. But if you want to connect in maybe a more meaningful way, you can find me and all of our training and resources at nextafter.com. We produce lots of different resources that are almost 100% free. Probably like 95% of what we produce is free, from blogs to webinars to ebooks and tools that you can use to help grow your fundraising. We publish almost every experiment that we run in an open source library. So you can see, you know, version A versus version B, what we learned, what we hypothesized, what the results were, and get new ideas for your fundraising and for your testing. So you can check that all out again at nextafter.com and find hopefully some resources to help you grow generosity.
Nathan, thank you so much. Again, we always learn something when we talk to you, and today was no exception. So
thank you.
We look forward to hearing more at CauseCamp.
Absolutely. It's going to be a blast. Thank you so much to both of you. I appreciate it a lot.
Join us for CauseCamp Fall this October. Hear from top of industry speakers, just to name a few, Dana Snyder, who has worked with Movember and Dress for Success, Scott Welch, an expert on how to make DEI practices fun and practical, and Farah Trompeter, who has led dozens of organizations through brand overhauls and fundraising campaigns. See the full agenda at www.cause.camp/agenda. We'll see you there.
Jordan, I can't believe that Nathan's background is from a Bible college. I mean, not to diss Bible colleges in any way, but I would think he has a marketing degree from like the Harvard of marketing schools.
Yes. I was floored when I heard that. But also I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
He's a good guy.
Yeah. What a great conversation we had with him.
Absolutely. And it reminded me, you know, you and I were talking the other day about how, you know, it's great to have an awesome academic background. It's great to have a long career, but man, it is important nowadays to be on top of trends. And that is something Nathan and NextAfter have built a specialty around. They are just ahead of every curve.
You know, and that leads me to my other thought, which was, we've had so many podcast interviews lately and we have done tons of webinars. And one thing that every presenter says is humanize things. Like, I mean, Stephen Shattuck said, like, you can have your automated systems, but make it sound human. And that's basically what Nathan said today. So
absolutely. Yeah.
Make it sound human, have it come from a human, like across everything that you do.
Be a likable human and then send things from yourself.
Exactly.
Golden takeaway.
Ugh, he always has such great tips.
He does. He does. I can't wait to hear from him again at CauseCamp. I can't wait to watch him in person because he's so dynamic, even in a webinar, that I have to imagine face-to-face, the education is just going to be that much better.
And he is doing a breakout session. So that means that it's going to be so interactive and our attendees are going to be able to ask him questions and work through things. I think that that's one of the most exciting parts of CauseCamp is the interactivity.
Definitely. Definitely. So get your tickets. This will sell out. It's cause.camp/register. You can learn more from Nathan.
Amazing. Well, everyone have a great week and let's get out there and do more good.
Thank you for joining us for today's Hubcast. Get more great content to take your nonprofit from good to grow at nonprofithub.org. See you next time.